podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live special number 275, recorded February 24th, 2016. Mobile World Congress 2016, Day 3. This TWiT Live special is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today. The crew is tired, my feet hurt, and I've eaten entirely too much ham. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit with the TWiT TV Network, and this must be Mobile World Congress, Day 3. Here at MWC, we've seen great phones, we've seen inexpensive phones, but we haven't seen many inexpensive great phones, that is, until this. We're at OB, I'm speaking with Raphael, who's going to explain why the best phone is the one that you can afford. Raphael, for those people who maybe don't know the OB story, can you tell us how it was founded?
Well, basically, the main concept behind OB was to deliver an uncompromised, awesome kind of design experience for young people all around the world. And the basic thesis is, if you have $1,000, you can buy something that's really beautifully designed and have a great experience. If you've only got $100 or $200, you're often limited to buying a phone which is spec-based, right? You're going to get something that might not be very beautiful, very well thought through, but it'll do, I guess, all right? So we feel that people should have the opportunity to have choice, and if you're going to pick a $100 or $200 smartphone, then we think our ones will stand out.
Let's set the ground rules here, because some people in our audience don't quite understand what we mean when we say affordable. For them, affordable might be, a $400 phone, or maybe a $300 phone. That's not where OB starts.
It's not, no. I mean, we want people to basically have access to phones that are under $100. So, you know, in many markets, you're buying the phone outright. It's not subsidized. You're living on a prepaid device. But your phone is actually the thing that connects you to the world. The internet's right there. You're maybe even doing micropayments in some of these markets. So it's really important. And having access to good quality and fantastically designed products is very empowering.
Let's talk about this. This is the flagship. This is where it all started, the SF1. Yep. The first thing you're going to notice about this phone is it actually feels really good. It doesn't feel like a cheap plasticky phone. It's solid. It's got nice corners. It's well designed. Tell me the specs. What are the vital statistics of the SF1?
So basically, this is a Qualcomm chipset. It's got an exciting Snapdragon processor. It's dual quad-core. So what that gives you is plenty of power if you want to run multimedia or 3D rendering. But it also allows you to run on a single core when you're not doing so much, so your battery life is a lot better. It's also got fantastic sensor for the camera. We're using Sony, the Exmor R sensor, which is one of the best in the business. We've got Dolby Audio built in as well. We work with them as partners to ensure that you have an amazing multimedia experience. And Corning Gorilla Glass 4 protection for this raised floating glass display. So we've tried to really pack it with all the best tech available and put it in the most beautiful body that we could design.
And the price point for the SF1?
It's about $250. It depends where you are in the world because of taxes and import duties and things like that. But it's roughly in that price point. And we have two variants, a 2GB variant RAM and a 3GB variant RAM. So there's plenty of power there for you.
Okay, Raphael, that's the flagship. Let's go ahead and wander over here to a device that's designed for those people who live in 3G markets. Now, 4G, everyone wants a 4G phone, but if you live in a developing nation that doesn't have a 4G network, it doesn't make sense to have one of those phones. Yep. That's why you've created this. Tell me about the SJ1.5.
So the SJ1.5 is a really exciting device for us because it's a mass market device. It's a 5-inch display, and it's got this beautiful ammunition design with the flat top, the kind of straight top, the crisp top, and this curved bottom, and It's a polycarbonate body that we've worked really hard on to have a 2.5D curved screen that fits really nicely in your hand, so it just feels great. And that design language is carried through to the UI, so you'll see the icons have the flat top and curved bottom as well. So we're really thinking through, not on a hardware level, right through to the software experience as well. And this is opening up markets for us at a price point roughly around $130 US mark. So this is currently our most affordable device.
And I know this is running Android 5.1. It's actually still quite snappy. I do have to say, it's not a cheap phone. It's an inexpensive phone. Yeah. There is so much design work that's been put into this. We were talking about this before we turned on the camera, where it's not just a rebrand. It's not just a plasticky piece of phone that works. There are actual people at Obi who are arguing with the manufacturers over a millimeter to make it look right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of so important to focus on those tiny details. And there's a friction between designers and manufacturers, because manufacturers want what's easy. A designer wants what he's designed, because he's put a lot of love into that. And sometimes you have to work through it with the manufacturer to get what you actually wanted. And it's too easy for vendors to make compromises. And we've kind of gone through that process and found that we could get what we wanted if we really pushed.
Okay, we've talked about the flagship, which will run where you are in the world, a little over 200. We've got this phone, which is a little over 100. Let's look at where you land in the middle. So if you are in a 4G market, in a country that does support 4G connectivity, we've also got a phone for those folks. Tell me about the MV1.
So the MV1 is a 4G device. For us, it's really exciting to see the design language and the evolution of what happens when designers get excited about smartphones, because you saw the design of SF1 with the floating glass display. We had awesome feedback from people. They loved it. And you saw the kind of unique shape of the SJ1.5, and this is kind of the love child, I guess, of those two, because it has the similar silhouette to SJ1.5, but we've incorporated that killer floating glass display. And as a 4G device, we're able to hit a price point of around $150 US. That's something that can potentially open up markets for us as well in places like Southeast Asia, Africa, LATAM, and this is a true world phone. All our devices are dual SIM, and we're really trying to basically give everybody access to beautiful designs.
Rafael, this is an eye-opener. I'm so glad that we managed to stop by the Obi booth, because this is a new paradigm in phones, a way to get an inexpensive device that is still well-designed and well-thought. Now, if they wanted to find out more about Obi, about your entire line of phones, where could they go online?
Best place is probably obimobiles.com. Obviously, we're on Facebook too, so just type in Obi World Phone or Obi Mobiles. You're going to find us, and please do engage with us. So we'd love to hear what you think. We'd like, you know, the way we design the phones is through, you know, ammunition guys who are right behind you, listening to what people are saying and what they're experiencing. So please check us out, talk to us on social media, and help us get these even better.
Thank you very much for sharing your tech. Thank you very much for sharing your products. If you are looking for a phone that's not going to break the bank and yet still has that design, well, help me, Obi World Phone. You're my only hope. At Mobile World Congress, the slogan is, everything is mobile. But not everything is connected, especially if you travel international. Now, if you are a business traveler, if you frequently jump out of the country of your home, you understand the pain that is trying to get a signal. When we are so addicted to being connected, it's difficult to take time out to buy a SIM or to make sure that you've got the right plan that will work in the country that you're visiting. You could do that, or you could get one of these. I'm here speaking with Eric from Skyroom, who's going to tell you that this is the device you need if you're an international traveler. Eric, what is Skyroom?
Hi, thanks, Padre. So we have reinvented the way that travelers move around the world and stay connected. So we've created a very simple, easy-to-use product that helps you to stay connected to the internet, to Facebook, to your email, any kind of application that you may have, one flat, low price per day. We make it very simple to stay connected on the road.
Now, take me through this device. So this is something that we've had, my producer has had in his back pocket as he needed to get data out, when he needs to get back to the studio. First of all, it is very small. I love that. And it also seems to be very simple Is it just a Wi-Fi hotspot that works internationally?
It is. That's right. But it's more than that. So we've optimized this device for global use, and we made it very simple to use. There are no contracts, no penalties, no overage. One flat low price per day, and you can get unlimited internet. So it's very simple. You turn the device on, press the start button, just like any other device that you've used, and now you get 24 hours of contiguous data, unlimited.
Okay, let's talk about that, because that's new. Normally what I have to do is, like, let's say I'm traveling to Spain. I would either have to buy a SIM at the airport, or I would pre-buy a SIM, have it delivered for me, swap it out of my phone to make sure that it would work once I arrive in Barcelona, and then I have X amount of data and X amount of minutes, but that plan will run for 30 days. You're saying that instead of doing that, I could say, hey, today I need to connect. Let's go ahead and pay for today, but not for tomorrow or not the day before.
Yeah, that's right, Padre. So it's really optimized for people to buy the device and use it only when they travel. There will be no ongoing subscription fees. And the way we do this is we've developed and patented a very interesting technology called Virtual SIM. So this device is actually local wherever you go. We don't rely on roaming. We're sort of, think of us as an over-the-top roaming solution.
So have you made agreements with the different carriers around the world to get that local rate?
That's right, we have. So we have wholesale agreements in place with carriers around the world. And using our virtual SIM technology, we can switch between carriers. It's a very innovative concept.
Okay, run me through it. Let's say that there's the TWIT listener at home right now who is considering traveling abroad for the summer. What would he or she have to do? Take me through the process from the beginning to the end.
You got it. It's very simple. So there are a lot of places to buy our product. And maybe the easiest place is to go to our website, skyroam.com. And we deliver to a lot of different countries. You buy the product. It's $125 US to purchase. Once you own it, it's very simple. You can go online and prepay for day passes. A day pass is a 24-hour contiguous period of time in which you get unlimited data. And you get 5 day passes for $40. So essentially $8 per day pass. Very simple. No obligation. Past that.
That's fantastic. I'm sold. I do travel a lot, so I think this is something I'm going to have to add to my travel kit. Now, Eric, if they wanted to find out more about Skyroam, more about the plans, more about where they can go to buy a unit, where can they go?
Well, please visit us at our website. That's the best place, www.skyroam.com. And we're really looking forward to serving more travelers.
Thank you very much for sharing your technology. Thank you very much for telling us a new way to stay connected. Folks, if you do travel, remember, everything is mobile and everything is connected with Skyroam. Until I took an arrow to the knee. If you were standing at the Intel booth, you'd look up and you'd see something that looks like a dance in the sky. Well, folks, that ain't dancing. That's the power of the Edison. I'm here at the Intel booth with Jason Bruges from Jason Bruges Studio, who's going to explain how they created a bespoke booth system using nothing but a few LEDs and the Intel Edison. Jason, what is this?
So we were commissioned by Intel to create this interactive ceiling, this interactive canopy. It brings the booth to life. We're able to play back content through the ceiling, but more interestingly, we're able to track the movement of people through the stand. So at the moment, where you're seeing white is where the stand is active, and where you're seeing blue is where it's quieter.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So this is actually giving me active feedback. This is not just a pre-programmed loop. There's information being displayed by the colors.
Absolutely. So each ring has a bespoke Intel Edison controller that's allowing them to talk to each other, is allowing the LED rings to be driven. We have 4 kilometers of LED tape with 1.6 million addressable white and blue points.
Now, if anyone's watched our know-how show on the Twit TV network, they understand how some of this works. They've seen it being done with an Arduino and a series of WS2812 LEDs. But the programming here is all with this Edison using C++. Now, that gives you the power not just to drive the LEDs, but also to give you that interface so that you can link these together. That's why you can show data. Tell me, what was the process of creating that software, creating this hardware solution?
So, essentially, once we'd built our first ring, we had to work out how to start networking. And it's our first project with Intel Edison. And we built a bespoke Ethernet bridge to allow them to talk to each other. And the first step beyond that was building a rig with 20 units on to sort of test the networking abilities and start to look at how the PIR component would start to address the sort of sensory cell beneath each ring.
I got to say, this is interesting because most of the time we just see flashy lights. It's very rare that we see a display where the lights are actually intelligent. Now, Jason, if they want to find out more about what you've done with this bespoke solution, more about Jason Bruges Studios, where can they go?
So our website is www.jasonbruges.com. So that's where you can find out more about the project and the context of the architectural scale artworks we build using digital technology as our kind of inspiration.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you for sharing this absolute beautiful piece of technology slash art. Folks, there you have it at Intel. It's not just technology, it's art. You've seen Samsung's new phone. You've seen LG's new phone. You've even seen the new phones from Sony. But have you seen the Wonder Phone? I'm standing next to Chad Sayers, the founder and the visionary behind Segas, who's going to explain why the V squared might be your next device. Chad, what is this?
Oh, this is the phone that we created, a project for about 10 years, working on a device that we felt was not on the market, that needed to be on the market, that people really wanted, and we would appreciate it if there was something out there. It's essentially employs device technology and components, features that are not in any other phone. We've got about 15 features in this phone. It's literally a paradigm change in the mobile device industry and a quantum leap in technology as far as mobile devices are concerned, in our opinion.
Now let's do some of the quick spec porn because our folks love that. Of course, you've got the dual SIM, dual SD setup, which is unique. I have not seen that on the floor before. Great battery life, a beautiful screen, and one of my favorite features, as you explained it to me, is the no latency. Not low latency, but the no latency HD. A lot of folks are used to using technologies like Miracast, which will add latency and slightly reduce the quality. You figured out how to do wireless transmission of HD signals without any of that.
Well, and I'd like to take credit for us doing it, but really what's happened is we've utilized worldwide technologies from a variety of vendors who have created these technologies that are not being used in the mobile device world, and we've incorporated them into the V squared. And one of those is the Silicon Image. The guys who invented HDMI are the guys who created the chip that goes in our phone, the only phone in the world that lets you take whatever content is on your phone, our V squared, and project it to an overhead projector the size of a wall in HD quality, or to your TV set, whether it's 40 inches, 30 inches, or 80 or 100 inch TV.
Chad, let's get better acquainted with the phone. If our audience, who is sitting at home wondering if this might be for them, were to wonder why they should buy this, what would you say are the six compelling reasons, the things that differentiate the V squared from everything else that might be here at Mobile World Congress?
Well, you've got to love the wireless HD. There's nothing like it in the world. I'm going to give you six features that no other phone has on them in the world today. But the wireless HD does something that's outstanding. It just, I've often looked at it as this incredible media device that the V squared is, that allows you now to project that onto a larger format. So you can turn your laptop now, or your cell phone, into a laptop, into your TV by using a monitor. What's exciting for me, if I go on vacation or we're taking pictures at the office, we're doing something I want to show to a group of people, I can take those photos and not crowd a dozen people around behind me or pass my phone around. I just say, hey, throw it up on the TV, throw it up on the overhead projector, and you can watch and see everything that was going on. So that capability is huge. The gaming factor is just a major wow, because people want to be able to play video games and not have the lag that Wi-Fi gives you. And you've really got that built into this phone in a way that has never even been imagined, except for, sort of like the Imagineers, so to speak, of the mobile device world. Number two is something that everybody uses on a phone. Doesn't matter who you are. And I saw the very first Nokia phones that came out with a camera, and they were really not that great in the very beginning, in the early 2000. We've been doing this that long. But we've got phones that are 13-megapixel camera in front and a 21-megapixel in back, and that's with optical image stabilization and DXO rated. So these cameras are at their peak performance. They're going to be the best thing you can find out there. We'll have the ability for you to download some cool features as well to the phones that will allow you to help out with, do different kinds of fun things with your cameras that people love to do. The third one that people are usually concerned about, and I know some of the battery features on the phones coming out, the power savings is getting better, but we've got a smoking, incredible chip that I think is outstanding in the phone. It's a battery saving, gives you 50% battery savings, up to 70% battery savings on your phone, depending on how much you use your screen. And so we're talking, in our particular case, with a 50% savings in battery life, you're going from 3,100 milliamp hours to somewhere around 4,700 milliamp hours. And that's a huge and impressive expansion of the capability of your battery. That's bigger than any other phone out there in the high-end world that's a 5.5 or a 6-inch screen. So the next one is the memory. You've got to look at memory because I don't know how, if you're out there and you've got a smartphone, you've had one in the last 2 or 3 years, you know what it's like when you're trying to take that great shot of your kids or an amazing photo at one moment and you're just nowhere near your laptop is. And I say that because you get this indicator that says out of memory. And you can't take a picture. You can't take a photo. And imagine if you're moving to 4G video now, you're really in bad shape. So what we've done is we put dual micro SD card slots in the back. Soon, SanDisk, we just met with SanDisk last night at their big event here at Mobile World Congress, and I was talking with their CEO, and he was saying, hey, we've got this, you know, it was one of the guys on the team was saying, we've got this 250 gig card that we're coming out with, and we don't know when it's going to be, but there's 200 gigs available now. So that gives you nearly half a terabyte when you combine that with a 64 gig that is already internal inside the phone. So that's a huge feature too. The next one that we think of, the rounding up the sixth of the 15 exclusive features on this phone, is something that I particularly like because I'm outside a lot. And so I feel the need to be able to do work, to do business, and check my emails on a regular basis. And so when I'm outside, I can't do that. It's just not really possible to do on phones out there today. We've got another chip inside of our phone that's just exclusive to our phone only. It allows you to do sunlight viewability on your smartphone. So those 6, 8, 10 hours a day that are outdoors when you're not in your car, maybe if you're a runner or, you know, if you're active in the outdoors, if you work in the outdoors, if you just love to be in the outdoors and you've got to find shade or cover your screen with your hand, are now eliminated. You actually have direct access to your phone, all the information. You can watch videos, you can watch movies, you can look at pictures and photographs that you just took in broad daylight. And you can surf the internet. In my case, that's a saver, so I can see what's happening out there or check media with news, whatever I'm looking at, social media, and find out what's going on in my world. And, of course, the last one of this of the 15 features that are top six we talk about a lot is the waterproofing. Now, we've had IXP7, which is great. That's the swimmable is what it's called, and that's 30 minutes under 1 meter, 3 feet of water, which is fantastic. But what we've done is we beefed it up. In the last 12 months, about 6 months ago, we started making some modifications when we switched to our manufacturer and built our own team of engineers to finish this phone. And what we've been able to do is increase it now to washable. So what that means now is you can wash it with soap and water and rinse it off, dry it off, and walk outside and start using it. It's just incredible. It's also packed with a couple other great things people love, which are Harman Kardon speakers that you shake out the water. And that allows you to go ahead and hear the same incredible Harman Kardon sound. They're dual on the front, so you got surround sound technically on the phone. You've got 3 Harman Kardon microphones that are really great high-end microphones. You've got a special sound technology that we think is unbelievable. It's going to change the way the world listens on mobile devices. It's called Cypher, and the sound actually takes you into a place where if you're in a noisy room or a freight train going by, the person on the other end is still hearing your communication, whatever you're saying. It's outstanding technology, and you add that to the Cypher, or to the in addition to the Cypher sound, you add the fractal antenna on the back, which gives you an increased capability by centralizing and focusing in a concentrated way the signal coming into the phone on the back. That allows you to have better reception for your for whatever antenna you're using and whatever the network is. You just got unbelievable features in this phone. There's just nothing out there that does what this phone does.
There you have it. It's a not quite comprehensive list of why you'd want a V2. If they're on the fence, if they're still wondering if this is for them, because, yes, they will be looking at all the other competitors, let's give them that last bit of information. Pricing and availability. How much is it going to cost, and when can they pick one up?
Well, it's great because the retail price on it is looking around $650. So some people are saying, oh, that's tough. This is a $1,000 phone. It's a $1,200 phone, you know, with all the features. And it's the most expensive phone made today for consumers. The cost to build the phone is outrageous with all these features in it. And it's something, though, that you can get for just $650. You might be able to get on sale for $600 US. But it's definitely something that is anybody's price range if they're going to use it the way this phone's being used. And if you're going to pay for some of the more expensive high-end phones out there, you might as well pay that same price for a phone that really gives you everything that you can get on a phone today, essentially, that is available.
Thank you so very much for speaking with us. Thank you for sharing your product with the Twit Army. Now, folks, if you're looking for a phone, V squared. V very, very squared. Touch is touch, right? Well, not if you're at Synaptics, because they've refined touch to an art. I'm here with Andrew again, who's going to explain what force touch is. Now, Andrew, Force Touch made a big splash in the latest iPhone. It's one of these features that people have heard about. Maybe they don't quite understand how it works. What is Force Touch?
Well, Force Touch is an additional sensing mechanism that's built on top of our capacitive touch sensing that allows you to actually measure pressure. So we take the same chip that is responsible for measuring your, you know, multi-finger touch on the touchscreen, and then actually use it to measure, you know, force input as you push down on the display.
Now, I can kind of grasp how this works. I mean, I've seen pressure plates before, but that's not how this works. It's not a pressure plate per se. It's a sensor that can detect how much force I'm adding to a particular surface. What kind of mechanisms do you have to make that work?
That's correct. It's very tricky, in fact. What you're really doing is you're trying to build a little bit of motion on the display itself within the handset case. So obviously there's a lot of very challenging mechanical design involved in every single one of these force sensing handsets. And once you're able to get a little bit of compliance, I mean, so much so that the user doesn't even notice that the screen is moving, you can measure that deflection using a number of different techniques and report that data along with, you know, the touch locations on that touchscreen.
So essentially, you're talking about an incredibly sensitive accelerometer.
In a way, yes, except the accelerometer, of course, is detecting acceleration. We're just detecting a deflection in some sort of display system within the handset.
All right, let's move forward, because Force Touch is one thing, but Synaptics has taken it up a couple of notches with a few products. Can you show what that is first? Because you've got an interesting demonstration on this BlackBerry that gives me a few extra options as far as what I input.
Absolutely. So in addition to the touchscreen, you'll notice that there's sensing on the curved edges of this BlackBerry Priv. So as I run my finger along the sides, you can see that the touchscreen UI is tracking, you know, the location of my finger along this curved edge. So that's one area that offers an additional user interface navigation path. The other one, of course, is on the keyboard itself. The keyboard is designed to be touch sensitive. So as I slide my fingers to the left and to the right, it will be detecting the motion. And there we go. I could navigate using finger motion on the keyboard itself.
And that's important because it gets us closer to everything being an input device. It's not just the screen. It's not just a set part of the device that allows you to control what's going on. But you can literally embed Synaptics technology into most surfaces, like, for example, the back of the phone, and give yourself that extra dimension of control.
That is correct. I mean, basically, it really improves the intuitive nature of navigating through all these different devices, and it gives users, you know, the option to personalize how they want to interact with their device.
All right, let's move on to one more piece of Synaptics technology. Now, we all have all seen the stylus, and the stylus is for different manufacturers may work differently, but some of the best ones have an internal power source that allows them to communicate with the touch sensors on the screen. Synaptics has gone a different route. Tell me about this.
So Synaptics offers a portfolio solution of input styluses ranging from the extremely simple conductive stick that works at about 1.5 millimeters of pen tip, all the way to, of course, our most sophisticated active stylus that would, in that case, require a battery in the input. Somewhere in between is what we call our multifunction pen. And what this is a pen that doesn't require a battery, but has a very simple electronic circuit that allows the pen to report different states. And where this comes in handy would be in this situation where you're trying to draw different colors using the same pen. So right now in this state, it's drawing an orange ink here. But if I move the switch here, I can make this draw in a different color. There we go, and there's green.
What I like about that is there is no power source. This is literally a device that's picking up power that's being provided by the display and then using the circuit that you've built into that to, oh, there's the other color, to resonate at different frequencies that tell the display what color to put onto the screen.
That is correct. And it's all done, you know, without a battery, so the user never has to worry about, you know, whether the pen is running out of, you know, battery power or not. And at the very least, it still works as well as a standard passive pen.
Andrew, thank you very much for sharing some of the technological vision of Synaptics. If they want to find out more about these technologies and about how they've actually been applied into the products that you support, where can they go?
The easiest place to go is the Synaptics internet website, www.synaptics.com.
Thank you very much again for speaking with us. It's actually been a pleasure and an honor to speak with a man who was involved so thoroughly with the development of touch.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
There you have it, folks. Synaptics, it's touch done right. Here in Barcelona, everything may be mobile, but not everything is tough. I'm speaking with Kip Walls from Panasonic, who's going to explain what they've done with their ruggedized line of mobile devices. Kip, Panasonic has a reputation for making the tough book. It is the original tough guy. It was the laptop that could survive pretty much everything, and you've expanded that philosophy to mobile devices. Tell me, what have you done?
Well, Robert, we have essentially taken and gone into the tablet space and said the Toughbook laptop was such a big hit, but people really like the idea of using tablets. So about a year and a half ago, we brought out a 10.4-inch tablet. It's called the Toughpad G1. So a Toughbook is a laptop. A Toughpad is a tablet. So we have a 10-inch tablet in the Toughpad G1. We have a 7-inch tablet in the Toughpad M1. This came out about 2 years ago. And then about a year and a half ago, we brought out our first Toughpad handheld. This is a 5-inch handheld. We do it in both Android and Windows Phone versions. And when we brought this out, extremely rugged. This is probably the most rugged thing we build today. But a lot of people said, love the ruggedness, love the form factor, but don't need quite that much ruggedness and would like something a little smaller and lighter. And so what we announced just this week earlier is the new Toughpad N1 and F1, and those are essentially thinner, lighter versions of our Toughpad handheld. It's a 4.7-inch. You can see it's a good deal lighter and thinner than the previous handheld, and it has some unique features which really make it work nicely in the environment where people want to use it. For example, it'll handle a 6-foot drop to concrete and even will allow you to drop it in water. It'll actually sit in 3 feet of water for up to a half hour without any problem. So, Robert, if you want to drop that in that bowl.
You're asking me to do this, right? Okay, so this is, and baptism. Oh, not bad, actually. Yeah. Now, I gotta say,
baptism by immersion, not just sprinkling.
The notebook is actually a very difficult device to ruggedize because you've got a hinge, you've got some complicated parts. It would seem to me that you could make a tablet or a device like a phone far more rugged than you could ever do with your notebook. So anyway, this is the Toughbook name.
Yeah, actually, one of the reasons we call it a Toughpad is because it does have that rugged DNA that people have known with the Toughbook family. But you're absolutely right. The smaller and lighter the device is, the easier it is to have it handle a drop or water, that type of thing. But most people today, when they look at tablets or handhelds, they're not typically looking at the ability to take a nice long drop, to get a phone or a handheld very wet. And so we've really got some real advantages with this one. Some of the other things that we're doing on this, which is a little unusual, is we've got this angled barcode reader on here. And the angled barcode reader takes the barcode, and instead of having it on the top of the handheld, which is where you'll typically find it, we actually put it sort of on the back. It's at a 70-degree angle. And so now when you're scanning, you can actually scan and see the screen at the same time you're scanning it. So not only is it the world's lightest fully rugged handheld, but it also, with this unique scanning feature, actually improves efficiency and gets rid of repetitive stress injuries that could happen if you're trying to angle the device to point at a barcode that's below you, well, now you can just shoot it right from there. So we've put a lot of thought in this device, and our customers are really responding positively to it.
Okay, but obviously these devices are perfect for vertical markets, for markets where you're going to have people who toss around their technology, who, you know, they're not going to treat their tablet with the greatest protection that someone, say, in a consumer market might. We've seen other companies try to ruggedize and protect their products. What is it that you think you do that gives it just that little bit of edge, that makes it have the reputation of being able to survive everything?
That's a great question, Robert. And the fact is that many people think that if you just put a case around a handheld or a phone, that it's going to hold up well. And the reality is that cases have their limitations. They will provide you a modicum of protection, but you're not going to get the same sort of drop spec out of there. And it's not going to do anything for things like sunlight viewability, for high and low temperatures, and even for things like for water protection. So there's some new technologies out there where people are coating devices to make them water resistant, and that's a great step, but it's not going to give you the same level of protection that you get with the environmental sealing that we do on our devices. So now that device has been sitting in there for about 2 or 3 minutes. You can see it's still running. Let me pull it out of here. And as you can see, it's still running. We also, I can actually scan your chest there. And we also actually have the ability to use this device with gloves or in the rain. Most capacitive screens, when rain touches them, they think you're touching the screen. So we have a rain mode that allows you to use this even when it's wet or when it's raining. And even if you're wearing thick gloves, you'll still show up on this. So there's a gloved touch mode. So it really makes it work well for the vertical markets you talked about. And that's really where we focus these products.
Kip, thank you very much for educating our audience about the toughness of Panasonic's Tough Line. If they want to find out more about all of these products, where they can get them, where the availability is, what the price points might be, where can they go?
Probably the best place, Robert, to go would be to our website, which is www.toughbook.com. They'll find all the information they need there, and including where to buy them.
I've been speaking with Kip Walls, who reminds us that if you're going to be smart, you better be tough. We're going to continue our roaming of the halls of Mobile World Congress here in Barcelona. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this Twit Live special, and it's Citrix and GoToMeeting. Now, I know all of you understand the pain of trying to get some face-to-face time with your friends, your coworkers, your colleagues, your superiors. You have to go from office to office, maybe building to building, even city to city, or if you're at an event like Barcelona, country to country. Yeah, it can be expensive. Yes, it can be troublesome. And yes, it can be annoying to get everyone on the same page, which is why we're happy to have GoToMeeting as a sponsor of this Twit Live special. You see, GoToMeeting is the easiest way to get face-to-face time with HD video conferencing, the easiest way to share your documents, the important pieces of information that you need to be on the same team. And we all know that when you communicate better, you produce better. Now, with GoToMeeting, you can meet anywhere in person, no matter where you might be in the world. And you can do it from your smartphone, from your tablet, from your laptop, from your desktop, without the travel expense or the hassle of travel. Now, your team can join by clicking a link. There are no signups. There are no speed bumps. It's probably the easiest way to create a meeting that I've ever found. Now, HD video quality on your webcam makes it easy for you to see not just that someone is there, but also to watch their facial expressions. If you've tried to do unified communications, you understand that an issue can be, do you understand if the person actually sees what you're talking about, actually hears you, actually gets the concept that you're trying to get through? With HD video conferencing, you can see that frown. You can see that wrinkle in the forehead. You can see if a person is there or if a person is there. With GoToMeeting, everyone can see what you're seeing, so you're always on the same page. I tell you, folks, I found no better way to meet without being in the same room. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to sign up for GoToMeeting today. Try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com and click the Try It Free button. That's right, completely free. Do it now and you can have your first meeting up and running in minutes. That's GoToMeeting.com. GoToMeeting.com for your free 30-day trial. And we thank GoToMeeting for their support of this Twit Live special. Virtual reality has been one of the underlying topics here at Mobile World Congress. And at the HTC booth, they've got a little something-something for everyone who wants something at a price point that they can afford. I'm speaking with Graham from HTC, who's going to tell us about the Vive. Graham, the Vive is, I'm going to say it, they've played in the shadows to Oculus. Oculus made the big waves, but when I've seen the technology, when I've actually tried it, I would put you at or beyond what Oculus has managed to do with their tech. Tell me about the development of the Vive.
So we've been working on this actually for quite a while. What we've really been focusing on is not looking at what others are doing, but it's making as the best possible experience in VR. What we've got here and what we're launching this week and what you're seeing is the final consumer version of the Vive. It's going on pre-order next week on Monday the 29th of February. First deliveries are going to be in early April.
In this case right now is exactly what you would get if you pre-order the kit. Can you describe what are we seeing? Of course, we've got the two controllers, we've got the Vive itself, and then some support gear.
So exactly, you've got the two base stations as well that we use to track the area you're moving around in. There's also a box there, which is where the cabling goes into as well.
One of the things about all VR solutions has been content. You need content to bring out what makes it special. What is HTC doing to make sure that you've got titles at launch, that you've got content that people will enjoy, that you have features that will bring it beyond just one use or two use or a dozen uses?
That's really important. You're right. We've spent the last year obsessively working with developers, not just ourselves, actually, Valve even more so, working with developers, making sure they're building for the Vive, that they understand how to create some amazing things within VR. We also want people, when they get hold of the Vive, to know what good VR can feel like. So we're bundling with two really cool games. One of them is called Job Simulator. The other one's Fantastic Contraption.
Okay, I do have to ask this because there are people who are watching our show right now, the members of our Twit audience, our Twit army, as we call them, who are looking at the VR landscape and they're ready to make a choice. And here at the show, they've got a couple. Of course, there is the Oculus Rift. Of course, Samsung has their new Gear VR. What would you say makes HTC the one to buy?
I think the clue's in the name. It's in virtual reality. With Vive, you really can move like you do in the real world. You can walk around, you move your hands. I'm a hand talker. I don't talk with my hands stuck by my sides. You actually behave like a real person in Vive, and it allows developers to build these really cool experiences, whatever that may be.
All right. Now, we could talk until we're blue in the face, but I think the people are actually going to have to try it out. They're going to have to go to some place that has a Vive to fit it on to see what kind of immersive experience that they can get. In the meantime, if they wanted to find out more information about HTC, about the Vive, where could they go online to read up and maybe make that pre-order?
HTC5.com. It's all there.
Graham, thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you. Thank you for sharing this. I mean, this is one of the pieces of tech that I think most of us wish we could bring home from Mobile World Congress. If you want to try VR, you got to get a little Vive. We're here in the gamer lounge, I guess, with Ryan Trout. I haven't seen many games or a whole lot of lounging here. I'm not sure why they call it this.
I don't see any of either of those, actually. I think we are the most lounging of anything going on here.
I'm totally lounged. After 3 days of Mobile World Congress, I'm pretty much lounged out. Now, Ryan, we're coming to the end of the event here. Of course, it goes on to tomorrow, but most of the press is packing up today because we've seen pretty much everything there is to see at Mobile World Congress. And I have to say, I'm impressed. How would you compare this to something like, say, CES?
It is very condensed, and so everything that you see is very targeted towards a specific market, right, which I greatly appreciate, you know, as compared to all the vagueness you get with CES. There's still a lot of halls that I didn't really go through in great detail, right? Because a lot of the stuff that the software side of things, we'll talk about that later. Overall, I've actually had a pretty good experience here at the first time.
No, I really appreciate it. First of all, because it is so much smaller than CES, just as far as walking is concerned. So you can get more content just by going booth to booth to booth rather than going across the city of Las Vegas. Let's kick it off. Looking back at your experience over the last few days, what would you say is the number one thing that you've enjoyed, the product that you've seen that has either broken down your preconceived notions of a company or made you aware that, oh, there's a new product genre on the rise?
I don't know if I saw anything that was really that revolutionary that would, I would say, changed my view of anything drastically. I did get to see a demo of Project Tango working in real life, right? So this was Lenovo announced it and showed it at CES. It was a tablet powered by an NVIDIA Tegra processor, and it had, you know, two cameras on it, stereo cameras, depth information, and you really didn't understand what the use cases were for something like that for the consumer. They took us to an art museum here, and basically you had these tablets, and it was using the depth information and looking at where you were at in the museum stereoscopically to give you a tour of it. So, right, if you picked out a specific thing you wanted to go to on the application, it would actually draw you dots on the screen about what your walking path should be. And it did that not with GPS data, not with anything, you know, specifically coded for it, but basically from the mapping data of the 3D cameras, knowing where it's at, recognizing photos on the wall or paintings on the wall, recognizing statues, recognizing flooring and doorways and stuff like that. And it was a good example of what you could potentially do with that technology in that setting or even in your home setting. And it was pretty cool to see actually work in a useful way.
I remember the first time I heard of and then saw a demo of Project Tango. I was a little bit like you. I was saying, is this like the Intel real sense? What I get it. Depth perception is interesting, but this goes back to the Kinect and the technologies like it. So what would I do with this? I think hearing you talk about the demonstration that they gave you at an actual museum where it's taking information and in real time doing all the back end work to figure out the geometry. You were telling me that it's not as if you have to point the tablet at a painting. It was wherever it is, it could figure out, oh, that's this painting, but skewed at a 45-degree angle, therefore he must be here.
Yeah, that's right. And the mapping process is all done on that same device, right? So the person who sets it up would just basically walk around with the tablet held up, you know, and walk around, and it would generate the 3D space internally based on that information. And so the idea would be you could do this in your house, right? If you get a Project Tango and you want to map out your house and then you want to place furniture in it, you know, the whole, you know, augmented reality idea there without having to do the CAD drawings up front to get it all accurately portrayed.
I actually do believe, I mean, for me, that is somewhat of a genre breaker because it breaks us out of what we think augmented reality is. Augmented reality here has mostly been glasses from Epson or from Samsung with as VR that give you an overlay. But to have a device that is intelligent enough to do its own geospatial location without the use of a Bluetooth beacon or GPS, that actually is very useful.
Or laser scanners or anything like that, right? It's so you get this device and you can imagine that sometime this year you'll have a phone or a tablet that has that Project Tango device in there that's more consumer-oriented instead of developer-oriented and be able to take advantage of it.
All right, so let's move on. Project Tango is definitely one of the stars of the show. It's definitely something that we're going to have to cover on the network at some point because they're only going to develop that technology. What else have you found? What made you pause and go,
The Huawei MateBook, right? I know, I think you guys had already talked about this, but for me it was seeing a PC device from a phone company kind of in the face of, oh, the PC is dead, oh, the PC platform's going away, this giant is getting into the PC space, much like Samsung did at CES with their similar design style. So it's a fairly sizable tablet. I think of it as an iPad Pro form factor, but with Windows on it, so you get easier and more straightforward productivity. They're marketing it as business device. I see it as both a business and consumer device. Pricing starting at $699. It's based on an Intel Core M processor. I think they have M3, M5, and M7 variants. It's really nicely designed. It's well put together. It feels very high quality. And you get the benefits of Windows as opposed to having to use Android or iOS for that type of stuff.
Right. When we were at the booth, they were a little reluctant to share pricing information, which is, I'm glad that you found it, but yeah, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be a $1,000 device. But starting at $699, you have what is undoubtedly, I used this word earlier in the press room, a surprisingly sexy device. Incredibly well manufactured, that beautiful machined back, the beautiful, absolutely gorgeous screen. It's a fingerprint sensor that actually works for the side swipe. At a price point that makes you go, oh, yeah, this becomes the leader. This is the one that you look at first.
Yeah, I mean, and this is it was funny. I had a conversation with Intel after meeting with Huawei, and they were talking about this is what we always envisioned when we built these Core M processors. That the idea of a 2-in-1 was not simply a clamshell that tore apart. It was this super thin and light tablet that has this docking capability, but yet you still have the flexibility and functionality of a Windows machine.
Let's geek out a little bit, because we've seen several products on the floor that are using Intel's M processors instead of their I processors. For the folks at home who maybe don't watch Twitch on a regular basis, what's the big difference between I and M? I know M is much more power efficient. It's really been designed for mobile devices. How much less power do you get for the same level of M versus an I?
So they're built on the same process tech. They're just slightly more tweaked for lower power consumption, right? So a Core M3, M5, M7 processor is still going to be lower performance than even your Core i3 parts or Core i5 parts specifically, but they offer a much more efficient use of it. And if you compare like a Core M3 or Core M5 to the best Qualcomm or Apple chip, you're going to get 2x the performance in browsing and that type of stuff, right? And In my experience, I have a Core i5 based notebook, right? A Dell notebook. But for the vast majority of things that we do, the Core M series processor is fine. If you're browsing, if you're emailing, if you're doing, you know, editing posts, you start getting into video and stuff like that, you're going to have a bigger problem. But this is a much better performing solution than anything that we've seen on like an Android tablet thus far.
Okay, so we've got a tablet that knows where it is. We've got a hybrid notebook slash tablet laptop designed from a company that normally makes mobile phones that actually blew both of us away. Yeah. What else have you got? If you think of the third thing that you would like to take home from Mobile World Congress, like steal, jump on the plane, and go back to where are you from? Minnesota?
No, Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah. It's all the same. It's the Midwest. It's the US. Yeah, it's the United States. What would it be?
I would, even though I've seen it before and I've used it before, I would still take, like they have the HTC Vive here, right? I would want to take that back with me and immediately start using it and not wait till April. They had the final version of it here. I got to talk with some of the marketing people and the engineering people about it, and they actually helped solidify some questions that we had about HTC has always marketed the Vive as this whole room experience, whereas Oculus has been very careful about, hey, look, this is your small space you need to be located in and take advantage of it. As it turns out, you know, the Vive works in the same way, and their spatial cameras, like those two little cubes that basically have to go in opposite corners of your room, are always, when you go to the demos, and like perfectly placed, 7.5 feet tall, absolutely oblique angles, but they don't have to do that. One can sit on a shelf and one can sit on top of a TV or something like that. They don't have to be at the same height. They use lasers to self-coordinate or basically figure out where they're at, right? And all that information, they're wireless now. They connect through the headset. So only the headset is actually physically connected to your PC. So it means setup in your room is going to be a lot easier than I thought it would be. $799 is still a steep price for sure. But the demos keep getting better. The software keeps getting better. And I'm really excited for that. If I could put one thing in my bag, that would probably be it.
Yeah. All right. I'd like to talk about a little something that I have been growing into over the last couple of days since we've seen it. Of course, Samsung has the new S7 line, the S7 and the S7 Edge, which are beautiful, and I think they've really improved the software. I think the camera features are fantastic. But that LG phone, did you manage to take a look at it?
The G5? Well, with the modular connections, right? The replaceable battery, but it's, you don't take off the back. You slide out the bottom, and then it kind of snaps in and out of place, which is interesting. A couple of issues, right? You worry about that seam, right? You worry about the mechanics of it. You worry about the waterproofness of it. Obviously, there's no waterproofness anymore, but the water resistance that you would have. But the idea of being able to swap in batteries easily, which is something that power smartphone users really like, in addition to having things like the battery grip or the DAC, is pretty interesting. And I think they've talked about, yeah, we're going to expand on this in the future. But obviously, that depends on how successful the phone is and how useful people find the feature. I would hesitate to buy in totally to it because of the finickiness of buyers. But I know several people, like we posted, you know, a video of it and news story of it. And a lot of people are interested in the idea of a DAC, especially since you can use that DAC with your PC as well. If it's not connected to your phone, you can just have it connected to your PC and you get a pretty good high quality audio device that way.
Yeah, for me, I was looking at it and I saw the promise. I saw the potential of the modular design. But, I mean, that goes back to way my early days of geekery. Anytime you give me something that I think I'll be able to expand forever, I think, oh, this will be the last one I ever buy. Like you, I'm a little hesitant, and I'm hesitating until I see more and more support. I know they want to make this an open process. They want to make it so that other designers can come in and make modules that people might want. And actually, I was reading up a little bit yesterday, and there's already a group that's trying to make what would be a switcher. So it would be a module you plug in that has multiple video inputs, HDMI, and then that you could use your phone to stream to Twitch or to YouTube. And I was thinking, okay, if you can get user support like that, if you can get developers who come in and make interesting modules like that, then it makes the concept worthwhile. Otherwise, I'm not sure if I'd buy a phone just so I could put a camera grip and a DAC.
Agreed. It reminds me a lot of the Intel Nook, right? The cover is replaceable, and they've always talked about the modularity that it provides. And, oh, you know, we'll have third parties offering TV tuners and NFC readers and all this other type of stuff. And it never really panned out that way. You don't really find a large ecosystem for add-ons to that device. And so, you know, when you see that type of stuff, it's kind of being duplicated in this way. You're a little bit wary of it until you start to see some momentum gain.
Ryan, I want to thank you so very much for sharing your insight with us. I mean, of course, you are part of the Twit TV family. They can find you every Thursday for This Week in Computer Hardware with the very awesome Patrick Norton. Could you tell the folks at home where else they can find you? Maybe they don't know that you're part of PC Purr.
So PC Perspective, PCPurr.com. We cover all things hardware, right? So PC hardware, notebook hardware, mobile hardware. Obviously, a big focus for us in the next 60 days is going to be VR builds. So if you're looking to build a PC or upgrade your PC for virtual reality systems, we're gonna have you covered there too. And we're also doing, obviously, the one on the new screensavers as well, where we're building the ultimate VR system too.
Ryan Shrout from This Week in Computer Hardware and PC Purr. We're going to send him on his way. Safe trip to you. I know you're flying out tomorrow. Yep. But I think the rest of us are going to continue to round around the Mobile World Congress 2016. But first, let's get our game on here in the gaming lounge.
Oh, okay. You find the games. I'll do that.
Hydrogen fuel cells are big, bulky, and expensive. Forget about it. We're here at MyFC, and they're going to show us that the future of hydrogen fuel cells is actually quite svelte. I'm speaking with Mu from MyFC, who's going to explain why this is going to be the companion for your future phone. What is this?
So this is the world's smallest fuel cell charger, actually, and it's portable. And all you need to do when you want to charge your phone, it's slide in the card, and you're ready to go. I'll show you how later.
Now, at CES 3 years ago, we actually took a look at the predecessor to this. It was a green and black device that had a power puck filled with the chemicals that would separate hydrogen out of water. It was a very exceptional device. We use it for emergencies, but you sort of updated the concept with something that's a lot smaller, a lot easier to use, and I'm going to say far more attractive. Show me how this process works. I've got a card. You've got one right there. This is the actual power generator, and this is the fuel source. Show me how I would kick it off.
This is the actual generator. You could say it's the engine. This is where the fuel cell is. This is the cartridge. It's filled with water and salt. And all you need to do is you insert the card like this. And then you could see there is a small LED there start pulsing. That indicates that the process or the salt in the water is now converting to hydrogen gas. So all you need to do is now to plug in your cable, connect it to your phone, wait 30 seconds, because that's what it takes to convert all the hydrogen into electricity, and then you're ready to go. Put it in your bag and keep on charging.
We'll wait for that to ramp up, but let's talk about what's going on inside there. In that cartridge, you had water, you had salt. Those two have started to mix, so that is a process that you can't stop. Once you break the seal, it's going to go to completion. But inside there, once I've got the hydrogen, it passes through a proton exchange membrane. As those hydrogen protons pass through the membrane, it's going to generate an electrical differential, which is what I use for my power. But how much power can I get out of a unit like this?
Well, that varies. You can actually, we will launch three different cards with three different capacity sizes. So first off is 900 milliamp hour card. Then it's 1,800 milliamp hour card, and then in about a year, 2,400 milliamp hour card. And that is because our normal charging behavior is we very rarely charge from 0 to 100%, right? But we start to panic when our phone gets down to 20. Then we can't live our lives normal anymore. So this 900 milliamp hour car, for example, will top off your phone with 50%. And then you basically, depending on your device or your need, you choose what capacity on the car you'd like to have or what, yeah.
The old MyFC charger, it really was designed for emergencies or for camping or for being off the grid. You've got a different strategy with this. You've started to pair with carriers to provide this as essential gear that they get with their phone. Can you tell me about that strategy?
Yeah, of course. So the PowerTrek, the previous product, that was more towards outdoor, and that was really good for that. But as now we're targeting more heavy smartphone users and the millennials and people that are living in larger cities. But, of course, you can use this in outdoor as well. But now the target group is more people who can't live without their phone, people are busy, they don't live that kind of structured life, so they don't remember charge up their power banks. They don't want to sit in the hallway half an hour to top up your phone with 20%. So this is a product that makes your life more mobile, I would say.
Okay, brass tacks. What is this going to cost? If someone wanted to start investing in this new power bank from MyFC, assuming, of course, that they get one from their carrier, because that's where it's going to start at, how much is it going to cost them per pack? How much is it going to cost them per charge of their phone?
So each card, they will retail between $1.50 to $2, depending on the capacity.
That's fantastic. Now, this is one of the technologies that I absolutely love to see, because it's really taking something that we thought was so far in the future and bringing it into the now. Now, if they wanted to find out more about MyFC, if they wanted to find out more about the products that you offer, if they want to find out more about how you've packed hydrogen power into such a small unit, where should they go online?
They should go to myfcpower.com.
Thank you very much for sharing your technology with us. Thank you for sharing the future of hydrogen power. And if you need a boost, get MyFC. It would be easy, very easy, to think of Mobile World Congress as just another tech event. After all, it has many of the same components as a CES or an NAB or a TechCrunch. You've got vendors, you've got technology, you've got blinky things, you've got the latest and the greatest in tech. But in truth, there's something special. There's something different about the international flavor of the event. You have people from around the world who have come here to find the best solutions for where they come from. And that makes it just a little different. Oh, we definitely will come back for Mobile World Congress 2017. But until then, I'm Father Robert Palliser, the digital Jesuit with Twit TV, saying goodbye from Mobile World Congress 2016 in Barcelona, Spain.